Hopefully all of you made it past Groundhog Day, which can be difficult, apparently, according to the movies. We have a couple of announcements this morning. First one is that the Lost and Found is very full. If you haven't taken a chance to look in the Lost and Found to see if you've lost something or find something, please take a moment to do so. We're going to gather those things together and send them off to the Hope Center if they're not claimed in the next week or so, so that we'll start fresh again. Al has a quick announcement.
Push out for our next orientation class, which is next Sunday following the service. This is an excellent time for you to learn a little bit more about the church. So if you've been attending for a while, if you're here for the first time, if you know people that you think would benefit from learning a little bit more about the history of our church and what we do and what we want to do, please let them know. There will be food. There will be beverage, non-alcoholic, and so I hope you all consider joining that. If you've gone to an orientation in the past, this one is different perhaps because we have our new minister, Amy, now involved in this. So please consider that. If you're interested, there are sign-up sheets, and hope to see you there. Thanks.
Thank you, Al. Our speaker today is Joel Gilbertson-White. He's a UU ministerial candidate and graduate of Star King from the Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley, California. In the summer of 2013, Joel moved with his spouse Stephanie and son Henry to Iowa City from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And there, Joel has served as coordinator of the UU campus ministry and as social action coordinator. In addition to theology, spiritual study, and social justice, Joel's personal passions include music, sound, computers, math, science, art, writing, volleyball, disc golf, and yoga. So, welcome, Joel.
Well, good morning. Thank you for the welcome. So if I heard correctly, Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadows, that's right. Yeah, so I want to say that although the weather seems to indicate that we have another 5 weeks of winter, I'm imagining some of you here are ready for it to be done. Anybody? Good, good. Then the opening reading will be for you. Yeah, it's been here long enough and strong enough that many here, we've forgotten what the spring is like. So in anticipation of the ground becoming muddy and soggy and the flowers starting to bloom and everything else that comes with spring, I'd like to offer an invitation to prepare for what we'll do come the warmer days of weather. So I will share these words from Reverend Robert T. Weston. So imagine yourself a couple months into the future, or maybe just not even so distant. Here is a day of promise. May it be so with me, with everyone. The gray clouds scudding overhead, the storm clouds, rain, and the breaking sunshine, the apple blossoms bursting in pink and white, the children gleefully running out to splash in puddles, the grass green and the buds straining into leaves on shrubs and trees, and the birds singing joyfully in the dawn, strutting the lawns as proud possessors. Everywhere life, life bursting through all fetters, and the heart singing, protesting against gloom, shouting its defiance of clouds and cold. The gay heart exulting in storm and sunshine alike. This is a day that aches with the promise of life, life which will not be denied. Let all hearts swell with glad acceptance, joyful with the sense of the always becoming. For out of the earth, into the air and sunshine, out of ourselves, there rises spirit in us. Neither dark nor threat shall thrust it down. It rises irresistible in us. This is the season's gift. As Paul and Zeke kindle the flame of the chalice, the symbol of our free faith, please join in singing our chalice lighting hymn, number 391, Voice Still and Small. Standing for our opening hymn, now number 368. Now let us sing. And I will note that this song has two parts, one for those in the lower vocal range and another for higher voices, and as it lends itself well to singing in unison, an octave higher or lower, please feel free to choose the section of your choice to join along. And it looks like we'll have the choir helping us. Thank you.
welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we strive to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, wherever they are on life's journey and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Whether your media of choice is the internet with its myriad of cacophonous voices, or television with its "look at me, I'm talking to you" attitude, or the radio with its "call me, we can talk invitation, or whether you feel more comfortable with a recyclable media like newspaper that tells a good story and then can wrap up a fish and some loaves, you are welcome here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by our welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to all of our visitors, members, and friends joining in. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all of your personal media appliances, from your electronic phones to any fillings you have that may pick up AM radio. Or, to be inclusive of those of you who are Luddites or are already unplugged, please use non-squeaky pencils and crayons and your quiet knitting needles. And again, welcome to all here this morning. We are so pleased you have chosen to worship and celebrate with us.
One of the ways that we care for our wider community is by contributing to our local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite the children to come up front for a time of storytelling.
Come up a little closer.
Don't be shy.
If you're closer, you can participate a little bit more. Okay, so I'm going to have to ask your help a little bit in telling this story. And so for some of you, this will be a review, and some of this will be a preview. Who here is familiar with Horton Hears a Who? Okay, a lot of people, this will be a review, and that'll be good because you can help me. So how does the story start? Okay, the speck of dust is blown across the mountain onto a flower. Okay, and then what happens? Horton finds it. How does he find it?
He walks up to it, and with his ginormous ears, he hears a little sound like a buzz. Because maybe this is the first mountain that he's found.
Okay, so he has these ginormous ears and he hears some sound on there, some little buzzing sound, and thinks that there's a person or a family. Okay. And it turns out there's a whole town of people that live there. So he picked up this clover, this flower, and decided he was going to keep it from danger. And then what happened? The kangaroo came and made fun of him. And then who else? Do you remember the name of the monkeys? They're always the ones that scare me so much. The Wickersham brothers, right? Okay. So they came and they snatched the clover right from Horton. And they hid it in a giant clover field. And Horton, of course, with his big ears and his big love, said, "I'm going to find this one little small clover." And so he went and he did hear them. And he said, "Tell me, do tell. Are you safe? Are you sound? Are you whole? Are you well?" And, of course, then the non-believers, the kangaroo and the Wickersham brothers and others in the town didn't believe him, and they took it away again, and they said they were going to, what were they going to do? Yeah, they were totally going to boil it, which makes me think that, you know, they had other plans. So Horton told them, what did he tell them they had to do? Make a lot of noise. Okay, and so the mayor got them to start saying something, and I'm hoping you guys can help me do this so we can actually make it happen. Does anybody remember what they say? And how loud do they do it? Everybody help me with that. We are here, we are here, we are here, we are here. All at once. Okay, so we got to make it loud. We are here, we are here, we are here, we are here. I skipped over that part. The planetarium into a music factory. Okay. And so it got louder and louder, and still things weren't happening. So the mayor and Horton's like, they're about to boil you. You got to do something. And so the mayor running around, and finally he found, quite hidden away, in the Fairfax apartment 12J, a very small shirker named Jojo was standing and bouncing a yo-yo, not making a sound, not a yip. Not a chirp. And the mayor rushed inside and he grabbed the young twerp. So they went to the top of the Eiffelberg Tower, and Jojo was trying to make up his mind what sound he was going to make. And the mayor coaxed him. We've got to make noises in greater amounts, so open your mouth, lad, for every voice counts. Thus he spoke as he climbed. When they got to the top, the lad cleared his throat and he shouted out, who wants to be our shouter?
Yap.
And then, of course, they were heard, and everyone lived happily ever after. Pretty much. Dr. Seuss said it slightly more poetically. Okay, so who is our lantern bearer today? Okay, Zeke. I invite you all to follow Zeke out to your classes, and I invite all of the adults to sing them out to their classes with hymn number 413. The words are actually printed in your order of service.
This church is a community of ourselves. Its energy and resources are our energy and resources. Its wealth is what we share. As we contribute to the life of this community, we affirm our lives within it. The gifts of the congregation will now be most gratefully received. Thank you. Now is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns. We do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. If you have a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone.
Good morning, everybody. This is Scott. I have two joys. First of all, some of you are aware my wife had a little bit of a medical situation lately, and everything seems to be going quite well, according to the medical folk. So very grateful for that. Second of all, I missed you guys. It's good to be back. Good to see everybody.
This is Phil. Candle of joy. We have a birthday coming up in the family. Our oldest daughter, May, is her birthday is this week.
I'm Sheila, and I just want to put out a joy for music. I gathered with some friends on Friday night to sing and play, and it was just so joyful to be together.
I'm going to light one candle of concern for my Aunt Vivian, who is just checked into hospice for stomach cancer.
Gary, and I've been away for a few weeks. Also, my father, who's 90, had double hernia surgery, and I went to Florida, too bad, to help, and he's really doing well, so we're all very grateful.
Let us take a moment now to find our breath as we ground ourselves for a time of quiet reflection and connection. Spirit of life, spirit of love, spirit of mystery, be with us as we offer our gratitude for the grace we are allowed through our freedom to lift our voices, our freedom to declare the incalculable worth of every human, to declare the importance of our values, and to lift up our critical need for a living home as we prepare for the 45th Earth Day this spring. Be with us to strengthen our resolve to discern what we want to say with our precious breath and our precious time, to develop our voices and to speak clearly whenever necessary. Be with us as we see a clearer picture of ourselves, as we adapt to change that which the mirror reflects, and not simply the image shown. Be with us as we struggle with human weaknesses in ourselves and others. Remind us we are a network of support for one another, and bolster our faith that love and virtue will find strong roots in this era of fear, confusion, and strong wind. And now, for all those prayers we hold with us in the silent sanctuaries of our hearts, let us have a few moments of silence. Today's reading is from a news report in 2013 by Andrew Kirrell. On the March 28th showing of The Daily Show, Jon Stewart ripped into Rupert Murdoch for the media mogul's recent attempt to buy the Los Angeles Times by petitioning the government to circumvent the media consolidation laws that were created with him in mind. Murdoch currently owns two television stations in the Los Angeles area. Adding the LA Times to his portfolio would violate a federal law that bars him from owning a newspaper in that region because of his ownership of the two networks. And so Murdoch has petitioned for circumvention of the law. In the interest of giving him a fair hearing, Stewart played the role of an interviewer, asking how Murdoch's previous newspaper ventures worked out. The screen cuts to news footage of the News of the World voicemail hacking and rampant law breaking. "And now you would like a waiver to have another whack at a newspaper?" Stewart laughed. "Just out of curiosity, are you the type of newspaper owner that interferes with editorial policy?" the comedian then asked. "Oh yes, if necessary," a much younger Murdoch responded via archived footage. "Well, we obviously want to say yes to you," Stewart said. "But we do need your assurance that you would never use this extraordinary media reach of television stations and newspapers to change the political agenda, throw an election, that sort of thing." The show then played several clips of Murdoch claiming his papers have single-handedly won elections and changed the debate. "We're going to have to decline your waiver, unfortunately," Stewart remarked. "See, the media consolidation law was written with people like you in mind. Well, actually, you, in particular, because of how you like to do the exact thing the law was meant to prevent. I'll invite you now to stand and embody your spirit and join in singing our centering hymn, number 147, "When All the Peoples of the Earth." I will also note that this is a song for Kwanzaa, and while the message of Kwanzaa and this song reflect positive values that we can apply year-round, the last verse makes reference to lighting the Kwanzaa lights, which doesn't really usually happen in February. So for today, we'll sing just verses 1 and 2. American culture, our cultures, see themselves through a funhouse mirror, but it would be wrong to actually call it fun. When I was growing up and learning about social studies, this was after classes called civics had all but disappeared from the curriculum, I was led to believe that we have freedom of speech and freedom of the press. But as A.J. Liebling said in 1960, freedom of the press is guaranteed only to those who own one. In other words, although you may have freedom of speech in this country today, your voice on its own does not have the same kind of massive free speech available to those who can broadcast to millions by virtue of media ownership. Way back in 2004, media reform advocate Robert McChesney reported, "The American media system is spinning out of control in a hyper-commercialized frenzy. Fewer than 10 transnational media conglomerates dominate much of our media. fewer than 24 account for the overwhelming majority of our newspapers, magazines, films, television, radio, and books. With every aspect of our media culture now fair game for commercial exploitation, we can look forward to the full-scale commercialization of sports, arts, and education, the disappearance of notions of public service from public discourse, and the degeneration of journalism, political coverage, and children's programming under commercial pressure. I'll note that it's been 10 years since he said this, and some of this stuff has certainly come true. For democracy, this concentration of media power and attendant commercialization of public discourse are a disaster. An informed, participating citizenry depends on media that play a public service function. As James Madison once put it, a popular government without popular information or the means of acquiring it is but a prologue to a farce or a tragedy, or perhaps both. But these democratic functions lie beyond the reach of the current American media system. If we are serious about democracy, then we need to work aggressively for reform. Media crisis management expert and Unitarian Universalist Helio Fred Garcia offers some simple examples of the attention distortions brought to us by the media. More reporters gathered in front of the New York Federal Courthouse for Martha Stewart's trial than for any prior event, including the World Trade Center bombings. In 2004, ABC, CBS, and ABC Evening News programs devoted 130 minutes to Martha Stewart. They devoted 26 minutes to the genocide in Darfur. ABC, 18 minutes. NBC, 5, and CBS, 3 minutes. And there were 5 times as many journalists covering the verdict at the Michael Jackson trial than there were accredited to the war in Iraq. This situation of skewed attention in media will be exacerbated now with the recent changes to end net neutrality. Internet service providers can now legally exert strong influence on customers, steering them to their own information sources, otherwise known as approved websites. In essence, further fracturing our information flow. Those who control the broadcast programming and choose the cable programs, who create the algorithms for returning your internet search results and your news feeds and the ranked results of your Facebook feed, they control the information that you're going to receive, that we all receive. And for those of you who turn to the odd corners of the internet to get real news from real journalists, you may find that democracynow.org, for example, being outside of your ISP's package, will stream to your computer at a frustratingly slow trickle. Is there any way that this can be healthy to making well-informed decisions, whether purchasing something at the store or participating in democracy? Democracy works best when it allows for the wisdom of crowds, the informed wisdom of crowds. A crowd of millions who all receive the same news stories may decide that wardrobe malfunctions or the polar vortex or the U.S. athletes' performances in the Olympics are the most important stories of the week. But because these stories are chosen by corporate news sources with economic interests, paying attention to what is absent and why is just as important. The news cycles did not tell us about the activities of the most intractable moneyed interests. The news rarely covers bankers who defy laws but stay out of jail. Money can be quite useful for handling stories so that they don't become news. Even Miley Cyrus has figured this out. In a recent interview with Jay Leno, she dispensed this advice to the currently trouble-prone Justin Bieber. You've got a lot of money. Pay people to make sure you don't get in trouble. The mass media generally steers clear of pro-GMO legislation passed for Monsanto and says very little about the multiple oil spills and fracking problems occurring across the U.S. There are minimal mentions of deaths due to the wars and drone attacks, little coverage on the burgeoning U.S. prison population, and how more money is invested in new privatized prisons while school budgets continue to shrink. These stories matter. How can we have an informed democracy when our discourse is controlled by the dominant ideologies of a few privileged media owners who determine what qualifies as news. Our mass media has always been a mirror our culture holds up to see itself. How can we know who we are when a large portion of what might qualify as important news happens away from the camera eye? How can we know what our face looks like when the camera focuses on an eyebrow or perhaps zooms in on a single pore? Maybe collectively we don't want to see ourselves. Maybe we don't want to see what we've become as a nation. And maybe there are people who would rather continue making profits away from the public eye, and they don't want us to see what they've become, what we've become. Either way, it's a lie, or at best a partial truth. Now, some of the Ten Commandments, I'm going to switch gears only slightly. Some of the Ten Commandments are a little hard to remember, and some might be contested by those of a less theistic nature. But thou shalt not bear false witness, that one's pretty clear among atheists and theists alike. Simply put, don't lie. Don't make up stories about what you saw or experienced. But we're steeped in transgressions marked by false witness, either through lies of omission or straightforward fabrications. For the most part, we've come to expect that our politicians will be duplicitous between their speech and their votes. And we know advertisements are frequently misleading entertainment having little to do with the products for sale. Drinking Budweiser in one's living room during the football game will not bring fame, glory, or the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. We now expect that the photos on the covers of magazines, mostly women's magazines, are photoshopped to be skinny, blemish-free caricatures because extreme dieting and professional makeup no longer go far enough to convey the unattainable image. We know that the real world shows on MTV and all of the ones that have since followed are scripted to be controversial so that they bring more viewers. And while the people presented by the media tend to reflect the lifestyles of the rich and famous, more and more people in real life are living lifestyles of the just getting by and unknown. What we're seeing is a world of artifice, which frowns on those who do not or cannot conform and participate. Those who desire or require authentic relationships may be marginalized as oddball outcasts. You may know some of these people. In the eyes of those who remain in a structured frame of reference, keeping to keep up with the Joneses as portrayed by the media. That's one unfriendly mirror. Far from being harmonious, this is entirely discordant with the songs and stories in our own hearts and lives. There are people in this very city, town, who do not get their life's message in front of the camera or microphone. There are people in this congregation who are suffering and longing to be heard. An authentic connection is more important than keeping up with somebody else's Joneses anyway. We need to meet each other again, face to face, not in cold, lonely cyberspace, and not through the lens of what the advertisements say we're missing. We know what we're missing. A holy connection to our own selves and to each other. What we have been given is the damage caused by neglect of not being heard, of not seeing and hearing people reflecting our points of view. We have no framework and no vehicle available to contain the discourse which our heart most strongly calls to us. It's disheartening and it's disempowering. We need to make room for more views from the heart, no matter the opinions that they carry. Only through authentic conversation can we grow our spirits in a beneficial direction. When our roles are scripted or constrained, our spirits experience stasis and atrophy. On an interpersonal level and on a societal level, we must clean our mirrors with vinegar water and newsprint, removing all of the smudges, streaks, and toothpaste speckles so our collective view becomes one with the clear eye of the Samadhi warrior. To do that, we must develop a true picture of what is happening everywhere. The underrepresented voices must be heard. One equal voice per person. We must hear from people in prisons, people in our poorest communities, people displaced by unfair international economic policies, people who live in the countries occupied by our military. For now, the best way for those voices to be heard is for us to hear them and to amplify their voices by echoing the words from their circles to our circles, so that one day they can get to the circles of decision makers. And to be clear, we also are decision makers. This system of echoing gained popularity in 2011 during the Occupy movement. Reverend Jeremy Nickel of the Mission Peak UU congregation in Fremont, California, had this to say about his first experience at the Occupy Oakland General Assembly. "What I experienced was something so much deeper and more meaningful than I could have ever expected. For the first time in my life as an American, I experienced true democracy. The work had gotten underway about an hour before I arrived. Thousands of people were gathered peacefully, centered on a raised area where one person at a time could speak. And since the crowd was far larger than the small speaker system could reach, all the words were repeated by those close enough to hear, and so they radiated out in a slow, gentle echo, a system called the people's mic. It truly is the sound of people hearing each other. Eventually, if we engage collectively and struggle for it, these voices can be heard through the development of a democratic media system within the mass media. We vote for representatives in the halls of decision-making power. What might happen if we also voted for media representatives to gather our news and offer commentary? Such an institution could build a discourse worthy of the term democracy. Our media system will be what we make of it, or it will remain what others make of it. We the people, us, the people in the seats next to you and you yourself, are the ones who can put this into practice in our congregation and in society at large. What is the most important thing that we as a congregation must do in order to be effective as advocates for all the issues that matter? Sarah Campbell, a longtime member of my congregation back in Pittsburgh, once told me, "When people are at war with themselves, they can't be true to you." I submit that when we see ourselves accurately and where we can practice compassion, we will no longer be at war with ourselves, and can then be true and available to whomever calls to us into relationship. From my view, for this to be accomplished, we must foster a resolute faith in the voices of others to inform our own. I will close with these words from Reverend Leslie Takahashi Morris, entitled Marginal Wisdom. "They teach us to read in black and white. True is this, the rest false. You are whole or broken. Who you love is acceptable or not. Life tells its truth in many hues, but we are taught to think in either or, to believe the teachings of Jesus or Buddha, to believe in human potential or a power beyond a single will. I am broken or I am powerful. Life embraces multiple truths, speaks of both and of and. We are taught to see in absolutes, good versus evil, male versus female, old versus young, gay versus straight. Let us see the fractions, the spectrum, the margins. Let us open our hearts to the complexity of our worlds. Let us make our lives sanctuaries to nurture our many identities. The day is coming when all will know that the rainbow world is more gorgeous than monochrome, that a river of identities can ebb and flow over the static, stubborn rocks in its course, and that the margins hold the center." Amen.
have some time at this point in our service to hear from you, so we're going to outsource to hear your own takes and ruminations on our topic of the media. If nothing else, if you're interested, what are your news sources? What are the things, where do you get your news from? Why do you trust it? Do you trust it? Those would all be interesting things. If you have a comment or any other statement you'd like to make, you can raise your hand, and an usher will bring you a microphone.
This is Jerry. Thank you for bringing up the issue of Rupert Murdoch and his control of radio stations and TV stations and news media throughout the country. It's not just limited to Rupert Murdoch, but it's going on right here in the Milwaukee area. I know many of us attended the program by Sue Wilson a couple of years ago called Broadcast Blues that focused on the corporate control of the particularly AM radio stations and the monopoly between the radio stations and the news media. And right here in Milwaukee, Sue is leading an effort to try to challenge a Journal Sentinel Company's license for WTMJ on the same issue. That we have a dominant company here that controls the newspaper, radio, and television, which really is against the law.
My name is Rick, and I'm a big believer in National Public Radio. I spent a lot of time listening to that. But in the summer of 2012, during the whole presidential campaigns, I had knee replacement surgery, so I had to stay at home and watch TV. My suggestion is if you have to do that and watch Fox or any of the other shows, have major, major drugs.
Hi, I'm Bart. Yes, I need to find out more about alternative media because on the television, it's, you know, except for public television, it's very restrictive. I watch the news, and every time I'm watching it or get done with it, I'm going, okay, what's the rest of the news? What isn't being told? A shocking statistic that I learned via Time Magazine the other day is that 20% of our incarcerated population are now, those spots are held by veterans. 20% of people in prison. And that was just, I couldn't believe I actually read it, you know. But it just really spun my head around, and so now I need to look in some different directions. We all know why, and it's mental health issues. But just an example of what you can find and what you can't find.
Mark, is the word veterans?
Yeah, veterans.
Yes.
Veterans. Yes.
Okay.
This is Mary. I'm in listening to you. It was very interesting to hear your point of view, and it's something that I think there are some positive things that may be worth remembering. Like, for example, we have a far more educated populace than we did 50 years ago. Far more people have undergraduate degrees than any time in history. People under 21, they never read newspapers or ever watch TV, really, very seldom. So that's not where they get their news. So they don't really listen to the news on the radio. They maybe listen to the radio in their car. But the thing that really does worry me is the net neutrality piece, because I don't know if that's a done deal, if it's going to be a done deal, or what's going to happen with it. But I find that concept to be terrifying, because it shuts down all of the flowering of digressive viewpoints that the net brings. So that worries me, but I guess some of the other pieces around, I don't think we're going to have newspapers around for very long. So.
This is Susan. I had a suggestion for a radio station that I really love. It's an FM station called Radio Milwaukee at 88.9 on your radio dial. And the music is sometimes challenging for me, but it's new music, and often the music is amazing to me that this is what young people are listening to. But also, they just tell community stories, so it's great in the car to listen to what's happening. It's mostly centered on downtown Milwaukee, and the station is owned by Milwaukee Public Schools, so they tell these stories that you would never otherwise hear. It's a well-done station.
While we're waiting for more comments, some of the things that you said made me think of some things. Is anybody able to pick up WORT from, I know it's like 45 minutes from here. Well, it's a great example of the way that radio can be, where you can really find out what's happening in your community. Also, there was a question. What's that? That's Madison. Yeah, yeah. 89.9 if you have a strong receiver. Also, you had asked about where there's sources. Way back when I was researching this quite some time ago, I made a little simple black and white blog page, mediareformlinks.blogspot.org, and I'll send that to Christina or Amy, and they might be able to forward it to the listserv. And then also, I just read that February 11th there are people organizing the daywefightback.org. Is about, you know, we talked about net neutrality, but about government spying, and we're getting a little tired of being surveilled consistently without good cause. So you'll note, I guess 3 days from now, 2 days from now, a lot of websites will have banners and such on them. More thoughts?
Thank you, everyone. We can continue any discussions in the social hall after the service. Please join me in the words for extinguishing the chalice, which are number 456 in the hymnal, and we will say these in unison. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
Now, in memory of one of the world's strongest voices for justice, let us come together and make sounds in the spirit of Pete Seeger with our closing hymn. And for those of you who are musically minded, or even if you just want to make some sound up front, I think we have some shakers and things like that. You're welcome to come up and join us.
Brothers and sisters, all this
Now may these words of benediction from Reverend John Cummings send us out into the world with a spirit of joy, hope, and commitment. May we never rest until every child of earth in every generation is free from all prisons of the mind and of the body and of the spirit, until the earth and the hills and the sea shall dance and the universe itself resound with the joyful cry, "Behold, I am." Go in peace, be in love. Amen.